Good morning, witches. This is the Witch Daily Show, coming to you from New Orleans, with host Tanya Brown. Our episodes span about 20 minutes long to give you just a little pop of magic. So, tune in, take a deep breath, and enjoy. Good morning. It is March 2nd, 2023. It is Thursday. I am Tanya, and this is the Witch Daily Show. Today's episode is brought to you by the magic of trees. So let's get your day going with a little magic. Our quote of the day is, "To love one another just may be the fight of our lives," by Amanda Gorman. So we are actually skipping our soup segment today, one, because it is not February no more. No more is it February. So I declare no more soup. I love soup, but now I need a soup break. So no soup today, I say. Moving into some headlines, this comes to us from news1.com. Black Folklore in Video Episode 1, Haints of Hoodoo. Host Grant Yaney delves into the ghostly origins of the color haint blue. So, welcome into episode one of Black Folklore. Host Grant Yaney delves into the origins of the color haint blue, a pale blue-green that can be seen painted on the exterior of old homes in the South. Today, you will find haint blue paint on hardware store shelves, but the story behind its roots is supernatural. So the tradition of painting porch ceilings and window shutters with this specific shade traces back to the Gullah Geechee, the enslaved descendants of Central Africans who labored on the coastal rice, sea island cotton, and indigo plantations across the Carolinas, Georgia, and Florida. The Gullah Geechee held strong spiritual beliefs and used haint blue to ward off evil spirits known as haints and boo hags. According to the Gullah Geechee, haints are unsettled spirits trapped between the living world and the afterlife. Boo hags are spirits that steal and wear a person's skin during the day after draining the human of their energy, and they will then shed their skin to hunt for their next victim at night. I wasn't expecting skin wearing, and it just caught me so off guard. So one of the spiritual practices of the Gullah Geechee used to ward off haints and boo hags was to develop a mixture of natural pigments to produce the color haint blue, similar to robin's egg blue. By painting a porch, window, or door with this color, they were emulating the appearance of water and skies, which haints and boo hags could not cross, thereby preventing them from entering the home. This is feeling like a familiar conversation. I think I posted in the Facebook group. Last year, I painted my tea shelf to match like a chair a friend had given me. And someone mentioned like, oh, that type of blue wards spirits or something. And I just looked it up. It is the same color blue. So I think I inadvertently keeping spirits, which is cool. Could, you know, I'm happy with it. Applying haint blue around the exterior of the home was considered the most powerful defense against the evil spirits, according to Roger Pickney, author of Got My Mojo Workin', a voodoo memoir. But the Gullah Geechee had other methods as well, including hanging a broom across the doorway and scattering rice or seeds on the floor. I also have heard this one before. A boss of mine told me about how she was raised to believe throwing rice by a windowsill would keep witches away. This would force the boo hag to obsessively count each straw of broom or each kernel of rice, providing a distraction from haunting those in its path. Salt on the floor would dehydrate the stolen skin and making it impossible for the boo hag to keep it on. Another type of spirit, plantahunts, would lure people into their grasp by shape-shifting into other forms. Pouring a little whiskey on the ground was thought to slow down a plantahunts from coming after you, as they were believed to stop and lap up the whiskey from the ground. So this is really cool. So yeah, Black Folklore. I'm going to link to this in the link tree because I think it's a really cool video series. All right, witches, I'm going to throw this over to our moon correspondent after this break. We will talk more. I will also put on the Facebook group Haint Blue. Let's look up what Haint Blue is. I'll share it with you so you don't have to Google it.
Hello to all of my astro friends. This is Serendipity, the Chicago astrologer, coming at you with your daily moon mantra for Thursday, March 2nd. The waxing gibbous moon empathizes in Cancer today. Here, the moon trines Neptune. This aspect isn't the best for getting things accomplished or packing a bunch of things into one day. What it is good for is meditative practice, quiet contemplation, and getting in touch with your intuition. This energy encourages us to recede from the world and connect with our inner selves, whether that's through our dreams, our fantasies, or our guides. If you've been having a hard time reaching your ancestors, today is the day to really engage. Your daily moon mantra is, if you do not change direction, you may end up exactly where you're heading. This has been your daily moon mantra with Serendipity, the Chicago astrologer, signing off and reminding you that you are in charge of your own destiny.
The Magic of Trees is not just a book on tree magic. It is about drawing on the strength of forests and tree energy to better connect with ourselves, other people, and the world around us. Each chapter reinforces meditations, spells, and rituals that will reconnect humanity with its roots at every stage of life. These practices take a hands-on approach to life and spiritual work. They lead to individual self-awareness and fulfillment through healthy natural practices. Plus, this text has the added benefit of fine-tuning spiritual tree connections, which never stop growing. Find the magic of trees wherever books are sold.
Okay, so we are back and we are sharing another article from the February 2023 issue of Which Way magazine. You're like, Tanya, again, yes, it's just such a good issue. It's not my fault. Listen, it's not my fault. The articles were so good. What could I have done? You know what I mean? So we are sharing Strange Love, a brief exploration of the wacky and weird ingredients of love potions. This was written by Emma Catherine. So, love potions. Magic is like one of those memes, the one where it shows what people think you do compared to what you actually do. So, while nowadays most witches tend to stay away from the morally gray area of love magic, at least when it comes to making people fall in love with some unsuspecting target, it hasn't always been the case. So, while us modern witches may be spoiled with beautiful and luxurious ingredients that might be used to strengthen any kind of love bond, such as chocolate, roses, perfume, history sheds a rather murky light on the love potion. So, without further ado, let us travel into the distant and not so distant past and explore the weird, wonderful, and downright disgusting ingredients of magical love potions of history. So there are many witches who follow what might be termed the poison path. And for the record, there's nothing wrong with this. But you know, safety precautions. So while many plants that harm can also heal, most of them are not so much to be like ingested. So like, yes, beautiful, gorgeous, but like don't eat them. In some cases, eating any part of any given baneful plant might leave one with mild, though uncomfortable, side effects, such as stomach upset and a general air of unwellness. We all saw what happened to Jimmy Angelo, right? It might seem odd that there are many instances of poison plants being used in love potions, especially when you consider love potions are traditionally intended to be eaten or drank. So perhaps the most well-known of love potion botanicals is the mandrake root. Owing it to its resemblance to the human form, it makes sense that this ingredient found its way into love potions. However, many folk tales and stories tell that if uprooted, the mandrake screams, a sound so terrible, it is said whoever pulled up will go mad. To remedy this danger, the best ways to harvest was to attach a rope above the ground and have an animal, such as a dog, pull up the root. Once the danger of madness was overcome, the potion brewed and drank by the willing or otherwise intended, they would have to overcome the effects of the mandrake. So the alkaloid content of the mandrake can cause hallucinations and even asphyxiation. This love business back in the day was a dangerous affair. So the mandrake wasn't the only poisonous plant that found its way into love potions. Datura is a well-known poisonous plant, with all of its parts being poisonous. It has beautiful white flowers, trumpet-shaped, that point skywards and smell absolutely divine. Each flower leaves behind a prickly seed pod containing hundreds of brown seeds. All species of Datura are poisonous and can lead to delusions and delirium, coma, and even death. The most toxic species of Datura is Datura metal, though all species are toxic and all associated with love and infatuation. In fact, Datura was also believed to increase sexual desire too. So the metal part of the name even means plants of the gods of love. Other poisonous plants often found in love potions include periwinkle, though we will look at this one in a particular form later on. But not all poison plants were used in love potions per se. And here we must give a nod to the most well-known of witches' plants, belladonna, a.k.a. deadly nightshade, a.k.a. bye-bye, Jimmy, Angela. So the name belladonna means beautiful lady or woman, owing to the fact it was commonly used by ladies to improve their appearance. When used, applied by dabbing into the eyes, it caused the pupils to dilate, apparently a beauty standard for Italian women in the 17th century. One might need to consider whether the risks were worth it, though, with common side effects including blurred vision and temporary blindness, increased heart rate, and spasms. So, those are plants. Now let's talk about bugs. At least when it comes to poison plants, one might explain their involvement in love potions in terms of the effects of poisons had on the human body. What is less easy of a reason away to the inclusion of animal remains, bugs, and insects? In medieval Spain, a common ingredient found in love potions was beetle wings. One beetle in particular was favored, the blister beetle, otherwise known as Spanish fly. This particular aphrodisiac was well known in the time of Roman Emperor Augustus. The wings would be ground up and used in potions or taken with food to increase sexual desire and potency. Earlier, I touched on the plant periwinkle, but I saved it for this part because despite the toxicity of the plant, in this particular recipe, you might be forgiven for thinking if, or at least like, it was the least worrisome part of, like, this love potion. So according to Albertus Magnus in his book, The Virtues of Herbs, Stones, and Certain Beasts, collected in 18th and 19th century, periwinkle wrapped in earthworms and mixed with leeks was said to be an aphrodisiac, particularly useful for married couples. Maybe the leeks were added to improve the taste? Which anyone who's had leeks know that, like, that's not their highlight? However, take a moment to consider the associations of the earthworm and its close association with the element of earth. Then, perhaps we can begin to see the links. With fertility and rebirth, we might even take the biblical meaning of the term earthly pleasures. There are many love potions from all around the globe that use animal parts and remains. For example, in Spain and the Balkans, sparrow head and deer heart were used in potions and food items. In Bavaria, bat blood was added to beer and was said to fuel sexual urges and passion, though perhaps it had more to do with the beer than, you know, like the blood. Now, human parts. This might leave us a bit queasy, warning, but you know, we just got through bugs. So before we get carried away, we might want to consider the use of human parts in magic today. When crafting spells to wish to cause some effect, either on ourselves or another, items are taken from the body can often make the working more potent. Think hair, menstrual blood, nail clippings, you get the idea. All can be used in beneficial and baneful magic today, whether in the form of poppets and dolls or spell jars. And it makes sense, magically at least, to use some part of the intended, a DNA link, so to speak. It should come to no surprise that such items would have been used in love potions in the past. And yet, considering many potions were intended to be ingested, it's not very appetizing, even less so when you add ingredients like ground bones. In the 13th century, French noblewoman Beatrice Planisols was convicted of black magic, with many items being found to have been used. One spell, or working, involved her daughter and a young man she intended her daughter to marry. A blood-soaked linen was found in her possession. The blood was the menstrual blood of her daughter, and Beatrice, or so it was said, was going to use it to secure her daughter a suitable match by making him drink the blood, no doubt by soaking the cloth in wine or ale. So, there you have it, a brief exploration into the weird world of love potions from history. I'm happy to stick to chocolates, flowers, and perfumes. All right, witches. So we are wrapping up this episode from The Witch Daily Show. I want to give a shout out to listener Bia Frias. Bia, you wise, earthy barn owl. Cat J, Cat, you insidious, starry-eyed pixie. Amy Suze, Amy, you smashing, scrumptious kraken. And finally, Shannon Howell Barnes. Shannon, you graceful, glittery oracle. Thank you for so much for being Patreon supporters. I really, really appreciate it. Well, we do have a card pull today. Our card is Bliss from the Metaphysical Cannabis Oracle. This card is the card of trust. You must trust that the answers you are seeking are being given. When this happens, your entire soul group of helpers appears through the veil to assist you. All right, witches. Before we leave, I just want to give a reminder for our Patreon listeners who receive readings. The email went out yesterday or the day before. So don't forget to respond to get your bi-monthly reading. And that's it. Don't forget any books, decks, headlines, sources, anything we reference today can be found in the podcast episode description or witchpod.com. And we will talk again tomorrow.
Witches, we hope you have a wonderful day, full of joy and gentleness and confidence. Links for this week's episodes, our website, Patreon, along with a free daily card pull can be found at witchpod.com. One stop for everything we talk about. Now, take one more deep breath and have a great day.
I had an abortion when I was 15 years old in my home state of Arizona in 1994. It was not a decision that I made lightly, but I have never for one moment doubted that it was the right decision for me. But so much has changed in Arizona and many other states since then. If I were that same 15-year-old in Arizona today, legally, I would have to get parental consent. I would be forced to undergo a medically unnecessary ultrasound, go to a state-mandated in-person counseling session designed solely to shame me into changing my mind, and then take a state-mandated 24-hour time out to make sure I really know what I wanted. And finally, I would be forced to give the state a reason why. Well, here is mine. It is my body, not the state's. Women and their doctors are the ones that are in the best position to make informed decisions about what is best for them. No one else. No bill that criminalizes abortion will stop anyone from making this incredibly painful decision. These bans will not stop abortion from happening, but they will drive women and girls and people into the shadows, which is what this has always been about, shaming and controlling women's bodies. In the week after I shared my story on my show, women were coming up to me in the street, in the supermarket, at my gym, with tears in their eyes, thanking me for my bravery. But the word brave didn't sit right with me. Why is it brave to speak to an experience that millions of people around the world throughout history have gone through? And then I realized it is considered brave because as women, we have been taught to feel shame about our bodies since birth. I am so sad that we have to sit here in front of a row of politicians and give deeply personal statements because the why doesn't matter. It should not matter. I am a human being that deserves autonomy in this country that calls itself free, and choices that a human being makes about their own bodies should not be legislated by strangers who can't possibly know or understand each individual's circumstances or beliefs. I'm here today to help destigmatize a legitimate medical procedure and continue to encourage women not to allow themselves to be shamed for their choices. And finally, I am here today for my two little girls, Birdie and Cricket. My dream for them is that they will live in a world in which women are truly equal with complete control over their own reproductive health. That is the dream I hold for all people, regardless of their privilege or parents or what state they live in. That dream is slipping further and further from reality with every ban passed. I hope that you, our elected leaders, can help us reverse the tide. Thank you. I look forward to today's discussion.